First, supporters of Madison law enforcement held what they described as a peaceful gathering yesterday outside the state capitol. It's the first known organized rally in support of Madison police since the officer-involved shooting death of Tony Robinson last Friday. While a couple hundred people showed up, some carrying signs with messages like Blue Lives Matter, a handful of counter-protesters also showed up to voice their anger with the department.
Jim Palmer was at that rally yesterday. He's the executive director of the Wisconsin Professional Police Association. Jim, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on.
Why was it important to you to be at that rally yesterday?
Well, the rally was interesting for a few reasons. Perhaps first and foremost, it was actually organized by civilians, people who do not work, they're not law enforcement officers themselves. And they organized this through a Facebook page that they created called We Stand with the Madison Police Department. And they actually contacted me yesterday and asked if I would be willing to say a few words. And I thought it would be a good opportunity to just express general support for the law enforcement community without, you know, the event was not meant to diminish anyone's views or disparage anyone or any one group. And it certainly also wasn't to make a declaration about the recent tragic incident that occurred here. It was just to remind officers that there is a lot of support in the community for the jobs that they do.
And have you heard anything about how Officer Kenny is doing? Officer Kenny, the officer involved with the Tony Robinson shooting.
He's doing as well as I think can be expected under the circumstances. Obviously, it's a stressful point in time for him and his family. But he also recognizes that there's a community that has a wide variety of questions and concerns and legitimate concerns. And, you know, those questions, they kind of go hand in hand with the authority that law enforcement officers exercise in an effort to keep us safe. So it comes with the territory. Law enforcement officers are used to that. They expect to be held to a higher standard. But certainly it's a stressful time for him. But he's doing relatively well.
Now, the timing of this rally, along with what may or may not be seen as its purpose, have taken some criticism. I'm just going to share with you one comment that was posted today on a Facebook page called Ferguson to Madison. And it says, "What I don't get is rallying for a person who has just killed another human being. Why are you marching and shouting for a person who just killed someone?" Jim, what is your response to that?
Well, obviously that's a quote from someone who wasn't at the event, because it was not meant to celebrate or recognize any one person. It was about law enforcement officers generally. And that was very clear from the organizers, and my remarks were the same way. It was just to express general support for the law enforcement community and the men and women who do that dangerous job.
Why have you weren't involved in the organizing of it, but what about the critique that it was on the same day as this other rally for people who are supporting Tony Robinson's family and organized by and other organizations that were helping?
Sure. I don't know when that other event was planned. I do know that the We Stand with the Madison Police Department group began trying to, you know, start organize this event last Sunday, and so it's my understanding that the pro-police rally, if you will, was scheduled beforehand.
And police, not just in Madison, but in cases around the country, are being accused of being too quick to pull the trigger. What do you wish people understood about police use of deadly force that they may not already know?
Well, that's a broad question because, you know, any use of force is complicated and has to be considered on a case-by-case basis. You know, we have the benefit here of a law that mandates an independent and transparent investigation. It's the only law of its kind in the country. In fact, it's a law that the Wisconsin Professional Police Association and the entire law enforcement community here in Wisconsin lobbied for and supported. In fact, the president's task force on 21st century policing just last week presented a report to President Obama and highlighted the Wisconsin model. So I think, you know, we believe that, you know, these cases have to be evaluated on a case-by-case basis. But certainly people have to, we hope people will take the time to learn the facts when they become more available, because the facts really do matter.
Can you tell me more about that Wisconsin law and how it's different from what we might see in the rest of the country?
Sure. And, you know, it's even a difficult question to answer because I don't think any one person anywhere in the country can tell you what the predominant investigatory model is. In fact, that was one of the recommendations that I made when I was asked to provide testimony to that task force. So I think we need to, you know, someone needs to do, the federal government probably, needs to do a state-by-state analysis assessment of what the different systems are. I think we have a very good system. It used to be in Wisconsin prior to April of last year that a department like Madison could investigate itself. It had the experience, the resources, and the manpower, and the expertise to conduct a complicated investigation like that. But, you know, people had, in the community, had, I think, reasonable concerns about the credibility of that and the appearance of that. And for that reason, we thought that there was a better way that we could do this, that this could be done, rather. And I'd like to think that the WPPA and the law enforcement community, in working with citizen advocates, was a genuine agent of change.
Now, going back to the use of force in this instance and in general, without speculating too specifically about the Tony Robinson case, is it possible for an unarmed suspect to pose an imminent threat of life that would warrant the use of deadly force?
Absolutely. In hypothetically speaking, of course, because I don't want to speak to the specific facts in this case, you know, an unarmed individual, if he's attacking or she's attacking an officer, can become armed in a hurry. And there are cases that, that I think demonstrate that each and every year. And, you know, frankly, a police officer, even though they may have a weapon, if they're disarmed and, you know, their assailant takes it from them, obviously the dynamic changes very quickly.
So the concern there is that the person would become armed during that interaction.
Absolutely.
And if you look at some of these cases nationwide, if we look at the step back, take a look at the big picture here, cases like Michael Brown's, Eric Garner's, Dontre Hamilton's, some of the frustration has come because in none of these cases was the officer charged with or convicted of a crime. And some analysts have said it's just really hard to indict police officers. Is this something that needs to be looked at?
I think it certainly is worth looking at, and our organization has been open to that. That's why we were such a critical actor in changing the law here in Wisconsin. But the fact of the matter is law enforcement officers are given some discretion, and it's up to, in this case, the district attorney to evaluate whether or not that discretion was reasonable and lawful, and that's something that remains to be seen.
Now, police in Madison and across the country, this is something that it seems like a sensitive time for everyone involved, the communities that are being policed and the forces themselves. How would you say this is affecting, I guess, just the mood of police forces in Madison and elsewhere?
That's a great question. I think, you know, the fact that we had that rally and there was a need for that rally yesterday perhaps helps answer it. You know, law enforcement officers, like I said earlier, do recognize that they ought to be held to a higher standard, that you know, goes to the fact that they do exercise an immense degree of authority in their efforts to keep us safe. Having said that, when you know, people in the community, most of which in Madison, fortunately, have been reasonable and measured, and people do have the right to express concerns. Sometimes when it gets personal and officers are called you know, vulgar names and murderers and that kind of thing, I don't think that's constructive, and I don't think that does anything to further the dialogue about how the law enforcement community serves the public.
Would you agree that there is room for improvement between, say, the Madison police force and minority communities, and maybe in general across the country, based on what we've seen so far this year?
Sure. Well, I think that the Madison Police Department is, I think, quite clearly one of the most progressive law enforcement agencies in the country, certainly in the state of Wisconsin. I mean, they have engaged in community-oriented policing efforts going back decades. And they have made great strides in making themselves available to all members of the community and making themselves accessible and making them a part of the process. And I think, you know, because that's true, I think that's why we're seeing, you know, a measured level of public expression of concern.
You said that Madison is one of the most progressive. What sets it apart? You mentioned some community interactions that have served them well. What else would you point to?
Well, right now, for example, the Madison Police Department, in conjunction with Dane County, is going to be starting a community courts pilot program. And it's kind of a diversionary program for young people between the ages of 17 to 25. If it's their first offense, you know, they would be eligible to be considered for this program. And you know, maybe the instead of a citation or an arrest, which would be held in abeyance for the purpose of this community court, you know, they would be asked to do some kind of educational offering or, you know, some kind of community service. And if they fulfill those obligations, then nothing goes on their record. And I think, you know, the proliferation of programs like that, I think, can really benefit our criminal justice system as a whole.
Police in Madison have been criticized by some groups like the Young, Gifted, and Black Coalition for contributing to the racial disparities in Dane County. And Dane County has one of the highest rates of black incarceration in the country. And Chief Mike Koval said his department right now being blamed for everything from male pattern baldness to global warming. He said that on our show earlier this week. To what extent is the police department responsible for contributing to racial disparities?
Sure. Well, if he's responsible for baldness, I'm bald myself, so I'll have to have a conversation with him. But in all sincerity, I think, you know, there are... Clearly, there are racial disparities in not only in Madison, but in Wisconsin and in communities all throughout the country. Madison is unfortunately not unique in that regard. And this is something that is systemic, and there really ought to be a broad dialogue, public dialogue about this. And law enforcement has a role, certainly, in that dialogue. But we also have, an achievement gap in our public school system. And, you know, there are issues involving sentencing, clearly, that need to be evaluated and discussed. So Madison's not unique in that regard, but what does make Madison, the Madison Police Department in particular, unique is, you know, it is much more demographically representative of the community it serves. It has it utilizes these, you know, neighborhood policing and community oriented policing practices to a tremendous extent, and it really has in many ways made itself, and the Chief Koval is a great example of that, a shining example of that, of making himself available to members of the minority community to make sure that their voices are heard.
With this shooting of Tony Robinson, the temptation is there, or at least the possibility of people looking at Madison and saying, Madison is the next Ferguson. To what degree do you see that or not see that?
I don't see that. In fact, we've said publicly from the outset that I think it's pretty clear for a wide variety of reasons that Madison, Wisconsin is not Ferguson, Missouri. One reason I just mentioned, that the representation of the department, the Madison Police Department is much more demographically representative of this community than was and is the Ferguson Police Department. I think the fact that Chief Koval, as one example, he met with the family of Tony Robinson that night. I think that was a great sign of respect for the fact that a family has suffered a tragic loss. And, you know, even yesterday, you know, you mentioned the police rally. Obviously, there were other rallies, and Chief Koval was marching with those people as well. And I think that kind of – it's just indicative, I think, of the view that the Madison Police Department, the philosophy that they have, and the importance that they place upon the perspectives of everyone in this community.
We're talking right now with Jim Palmer of the Wisconsin Professional Police Association about how police officers are grappling with the officer-involved shooting death of Tony Robinson.
And we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about police practices, things like the use of deadly force, things like police community relations, too? Do you think the public needs to show more support for law enforcement? Are you? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email talk@WPR.org.
We're hearing a police perspective on the shooting death of Tony Robinson in Madison last Friday and taking a look at the prevailing issues between the police and the public regarding race.
Jim Palmer is with us. He's executive director of the Wisconsin Professional Police Association. And you can join in. What do you think needs to happen to build trust between the police and the public? And what do you want to know more about when it comes to how police do their job? Call 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org.
And Jim, I want to get to our callers, but briefly here, before we get there, last night a couple of officers shot outside the police department in Ferguson. What is your reaction to that?
Well, as a spokesman, I guess, for the law enforcement community here in Wisconsin, our hearts go out to the families of the two officers. One was a St. Louis County police officer. The other was a Webster Groves police officer. Obviously, they've in Ferguson, both the law enforcement community and the general public have really endured a difficult time, and that it's unfortunate that has continued. And hopefully we can avoid that here in Madison. I believe we will.
And protests have been peaceful so far, but do you see that changing at all, for example, if the district attorney decides not to prosecute Officer Kenny?
I certainly hope not. I wouldn't. We'll have to cross that bridge, I guess, when we come to it. We're not trying to predict what the district attorney's decision will be, and that's why, out of respect for the investigatory process and the DA's process, we're really trying to refrain from comment on the specific facts because we want to respect their right to make their decision, and then we'll deal with it at that time.
Okay, we're going to go to our callers now. We've got Terry on the line in Milwaukee. Terry, hi.
Hi. First of all, when any of these incidents occur, I think everyone's in agreement that this is a tragedy, not only for the people involved, but for the survivors. But in response to the officer's comment about you know, respect for the investigation and holding off and making comments. I wonder whether or not, in some of these cases, that's the prudent thing to do. A protocol should be established, I think, for the early release of factual information based on real physical evidence that would explain to the public what actually happened. When some of these cases occur where it's reported that somebody got shot in the back and the medical examiner examines the deceased body and there's no bullet holes in the back, why that information would not be released immediately is baffling.
Terry, thank you for your question. Does it take too long for information to come out in circumstances like these?
I don't think so. And this really allows to point out another distinction between what's been going on in, here in Madison and in Wisconsin generally in these situations when you look compared against something like what occurred in Ferguson. In Ferguson, as you may recall, you know, there was a kind of dribbling of facts that came out. And, you know, you have certain members on, and regardless of their perspective, that kind of, you know, pounce on those facts and use that as evidence of a conclusion that's not based on the totality of the facts. And so we really believe that it's in the public's best interest to consider the facts in their totality.
And we've got a comment here, or a question rather, from Greg in Milwaukee, who wants to know, with so many other tools at an officer's disposal, why reach for the gun first? They have tasers, clubs, they're physically fit. Why the gun?
Well, that's a fair question, and I will again will you know try to speak generally without getting to the specifics. But there are a number of reasons. If someone is entering a premises or a situation that they believe to be dangerous and possibly lethal, they go in with the lethal resources at hand. If you believe that there's a crime in progress, and as an officer, you walk into that situation, you're not going to pull out your taser first. Conversely, if somebody has something that's less lethal, and you have the opportunity to use that those resources, then that would be appropriate.
Okay, well, thank you for that question, Greg. We're going to go next to Chris, joining us in Madison. Chris, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. My question is, what training do the officers go through on issues of white privilege and what it's like to be a minority in our citizenry? You know, 80% of the juveniles in detention are African-American when they make up less than 10% of our population, and that's a problem. I also was at the rally yesterday supporting Tony Robinson and made a specific point not to engage in the chants that were putting down the policemen because I believe all life is sacred. And when I said thank you to the police in front of other marchers, thanking them because they guided the march to the governor's mansion, some acknowledged me and some didn't. And clearly some were angry. And so it's a complex issue that tends to get reduced to sound bites. So I'm just wondering what training are officers put through to support them in these challenging situations, which is challenging just living in life in a country that has the courage to try and be diverse and multiracial.
Chris, thank you for that. A couple of issues there. What training do officers get in white privilege? And also just the complexity of the situation here, how officers are feeling, how different protesters are feeling. What do
sure.
you say?
Well, and at first, I also want to thank Chris for her question and for what she described in terms of her how she handled herself at the rally yesterday for in support of Tony Robinson. Not everybody has been that way. And behave that way. And so obviously officers know that that comes with the job, as I mentioned earlier. But it can be difficult to have someone, scream at you and call you a murderer. And you're an officer who's just, trying to guide a march along and allow them and facilitate their expression of their rights of free speech. As to the question of training, I think it's a great question. I think it's the case. I'm confident that there's probably no department in the state of Wisconsin, where the officers undergo more training and sensitivity training or unconscious bias training than in the Madison Police Department.
Right. We've heard a lot about the term bias training. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is and what that training might involve?
Sure. A great question. And basically it involves a variety, just about every officer, I believe every officer has been subjected or has gone through this training in the last few years. And, it involves a variety of measures. You know, they have people come in from the community that have had maybe a bad experience with law enforcement, and they go through hypotheticals. And it's designed to get people to acknowledge and gain an awareness of any individual biases that they may have. And the idea is that if you're aware of those individual biases, that you can be, and you're more cognizant of them, that you can better prevent them from, putting them into practice and somehow, interfering with your interactions with the public.
Now, an incident like this one, it can drive deep wedges in the community. It can breed resentment. How does a community come back from something like this?
Well, I think it, I think it won't, we won't have to come back from as far as maybe, the community in Ferguson will have to. Because the expressions of speech and concern and the questions that have been asked, again, I think even law enforcement officers respect the public's right to have these questions. And we just have to, wait until more facts are known. There is an investigatory report that will be released to the public, again, by virtue of a law that no other state has in the country. But then once we have all the facts, it will really require a genuine dialogue with all segments of the community in the city, and to explore whether or not improvements can be made and how best to achieve that.
And we heard from Chris there, obviously feeling conflicted, lots of different feelings going around on all sides. What should citizens do if they want to reconcile some of the feelings that they're having, if they're feeling angry, for instance, about what happened or confused?
Well, I think, even law enforcement officers are angry. And they're not angry at people who express their point of view or raise questions. They're angry that this happened. I mean, they're angry that, we do live in a community where a young man has lost his life, and that is tragic. And so I think you just have to, we have to wait until we have more information, and then we really just, again, have to engage in a dialogue that includes all segments of the community. I think that really is the best way to heal and to learn and to possibly explore whether improvements can be made.
Does it seem too soon to be doing that right now? Are we at a sort of intermediary phase, or are we at the part where we can start to have those dialogues?
I think you can always start to have those dialogues. I don't think it's ever too early, frankly. And I think, it's important for, again, every segment of the community, including the law enforcement community, to have a voice at that table. And so that, people in the community that have concerns about how officers utilize force, they can learn a little bit more about that. And likewise, officers can learn more about the biases that they feel they're being subjected to.
Jim, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Jim Palmer, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Professional Police Association.
Related topic, Friday night at 7:30 here on Wisconsin Public Radio, we bring you a special half hour devoted to race and social justice with Wisconsin Public Television's Here and Now. Community leaders and police leaders from across Madison join the show to help bring greater understanding to the complex and deeply divisive issues facing the community, state, and country. That's Friday night at 7:30 here on Wisconsin Public Radio.